Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
What's up, Stream Fiends? Steve here to let you know that what you're about to listen to is Kit and I's review of Cabin in the Woods. Now, we recorded this episode all the way back in July. It released on our Patreon on July 25th, and this is a chosen episode. Now, you've listened to plenty of chosen episodes here on the main feed in the past, but this one came out right around the time that the actors and writer strike was really popping off and we really didn't have a lot of information to go on. So just to be safe at the time, we treated this as pre-struck work and that we were only going to be releasing these on Patreon. Now, obviously, we've gotten more information as time went on. We're allowed to do movie reviews on the main podcast. We're not allowed to do companion reviews of like concurrent TV shows, but we can do individual movie reviews currently. The funny thing is that the patron who suggested this Kloop, it just was kind of unfair to her that her episode was the one that was kind of hidden away on our Patreon. So we thought we would finally release this episode onto the main feed. We know a couple people have been asking us, you know, where is the Cabin in the Woods review? And here it is. We hope you enjoy this episode. But if you hear any sort of outdated information about the strike, the podcast, or life in general, that's why this episode's a couple months old. But we hope you enjoy it. And with that, happy streaming.
Welcome back. My name is Kit Laser.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. This time we're covering Cabin in the Woods. A little old movie from 2012, directed by Drew Goddard, co-written by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon.
Aww.
Things came out about Joss Whedon since then. He was a hero at the time.
Yeah.
The Buffy the Vampire Slayer guy. The Firefly guy.
Yeah, the Firefly.
I know you love Firefly.
Love it so much.
Nathan Fillion, baby.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, we're going to talk about our overall thoughts of the movie, like our experience with it before this, what it was like rewatching it, and then we'll dive into a scene-by-scene recap real quick for fun and games, shits and gigs for you folks. Thank you for supporting the show. All of these movies are Patreon-only, as you've heard, for now, because these count as pre-contracted requests from our members, and that's how we stay in solidarity with SAG-AFTRA and the WGA strikes. You can support the strike directly by going to the links and donating, but you can also buy our Striking Things shirt, all proceeds of which go directly to the strikers. We will keep none of that money. That's just our way of supporting the efforts.
Yeah, and if you ever find yourself at a picket line, it might be fun to have a shirt that says Striking Things on it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think so. And it's got the little pause button and stuff on it.
And also, if you ever feel like the type of person like, hey, in the future, I'm going to be striking stuff. You got a shirt, you know, there you go. You're ready. You got a uniform. You're good to go.
You can never have too many shirts.
No. And this episode, Chris.
Yes.
Cabin in the Woods is what we're going to be talking about. This was suggested by a patron named Kloop.
Kloop. Love Kloop.
I feel so bad for Kloop. I don't know if you clocked this this the saga, as it were.
No.
So last week when the world fell apart with the strikes, right, and we didn't know what we were doing, the original schedule for that week for streaming things was Lost on Monday, Cabin in the Woods on Wednesday, Lost Episode 2 on Thursday.
Yes.
Kloop suggested Cabin in the Woods, but Kloop is also the biggest Lost fan in the Discord, I think. So when this week came up and we had the schedule out, she was like, best week ever. Cannot wait. My chickens are coming to roost. It's all about Kloop now, baby.
Oh.
And then last week happened and yes. None of that happened for poor Kloop. So hopefully, Kloop, you listen to this and you can know, you know, we
love you.
We love you. I felt awful for you. Like, I was actually talking to my girlfriend, like, man, I feel so bad for Kloop. She was really looking forward to this week.
It's not our fault.
Yeah. But hopefully this episode of Cabin in the Woods makes up for that a little bit.
I hope so.
And I got to say, episode 6 and 7 of Lost that we recorded, fire.
Fire.
Those are actually, honestly, I was very happy with those
episodes. No, those are great episodes. I can't wait for you guys to hear them.
Yeah, they're going to be great.
We got them locked and loaded and ready to go for whenever the strike ends or our limitations are released a little bit to still be in solidarity, but we're just doing our best right now. But Steve, I'm curious to know, what is your history with the movie Cabin in the Woods and what was it like watching it again for you?
My history is interesting with Cabin in the Woods. As everyone knows, I'm not a big horror movie fan.
That would be a barrier to fully enjoying this.
Yeah, that's just not like the type of genre that I typically stick towards. So when Cabin in the Woods came out, I just didn't really pay any attention to it. It wasn't on my radar at all. Did not see it in the theater. And then many years later, like 3 or 4 years after it had come out, I think it had gotten a pretty big following online. Like, people love Cabin in the Woods. Like, you gotta see it. And at some point, I think somebody was telling me, like, oh, it was written by Joss Whedon. And, you know, this was pre what we know about him now. So back then it was like, oh, Joss Whedon wrote a thing. Yeah, I'll watch that. I love Joss Whedon, you know? So I think I was by myself. It was just kind of a random night at home. And I was like, oh, I heard this is good. And if it's not good, I'll just turn it off. And Chris, this movie is fucking amazing.
Yes, it is.
I love this movie because it has fun with the genre of horror while not like being an, I don't really see this as a horror movie per se. It's more of a action comedy to me.
Sure.
It's very funny. It's very smart. You got a great cast. Like, oh my God, Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins. Our life. I just want like a Netflix TV series about this like government agency that runs the ritual.
Keeping the ancient ones at bay.
Yeah. Because they do such a great job at establishing this, you know, water cooler. It's just my day job. But what their day job is pretty fucked up. But they're just so, you know, used to it. That
desensitized.
It doesn't phase them at all. And like this whole government apparatus is just like that, you know. And they have a lot of fun with this concept, and it's such a ball. So when Kloop nominated Cabin in the Woods, you know, several months ago when she became a patron, I was honestly like, oh my God, yeah, I haven't seen Cabin in the Woods in a while. That was a lot of fun. So rewatching it last week, because I watched it last week in preparation for when we were originally supposed to do this, I was just shocked with how much fun I was having with it again. It's just such a fun movie. I love it.
No, I'm the same way. I adore this movie. I'm not as big of a horror aficionado as somebody like Andy is, but I do love the genre, especially in recent years when I'm becoming more and more entrenched in the classics and stuff as time goes on. This movie, you know, I'm a sucker. I'm such a slut for clever dialogue and
big slut.
Meta references. And there's so many good references to Sam Raimi's The Evil Dead in this. They reference Ringu when you go to the peek at the Japanese branch of this government briefly. And there's a whiteboard at one point that lists all the different monsters, and we find them coming out of the stables in the third act. But there's a couple little jokes in there, like angry molesting tree is written on there, which is another reference to Sam Raimi's Evil Dead. They reference the face hugger from Alien. The Hills Have Eyes are referenced. It's so many. And then the whole idea of the tropes of horror in general, like the idea of the virgin or the final girl, is kind of a huge plot point in this movie. And the whore, the one that shows her boobs and then dies first, like that's a classic. Kind of the chaste trope of horror where, you know, the ones that have sex die first. And there's so much to this. The Harbinger, the whole bit with the Harbinger. Am I on speakerphone? Like, that's It's fucking hilarious. Because there's always that, like, hillbilly guy at the rundown gas station that warns them of the doom
don't
to come.
Don't go up that road.
Yeah. Don't go down that road. And the fact that they all... Even at the office, mock that guy. Oh, it's the fucking Harbingers on line one.
Tell
them
busy.
God.
Tell them busy.
It's so funny to me. And revisiting it, I've seen this 3 or 4 times. Andy and I used to watch it together quite often. We've always loved this movie. I wish he was here for this episode. A blast revisiting it. Absolute blast watching it this morning.
I remember the first time watching it, I had a vague understanding of... Oh, it's kind of a funny deconstruction of what horror means, but I was not prepared for what that meant. Just how much there's like, oh, you're tricking people into a cabin in the woods, and it's actually just the secret government facility where you can't leave, and they can like introduce monsters at will, and there's a whole underground base. It's, oh my God, it's so crazy.
Yes, yeah, and it gets deeper and deeper. The more you know, the more you see. Very cleverly done. And one of the earliest, sightings of Chris Hemsworth that I can think of, if not the earliest. He's great in this. And I love that there's the whole bit where they, because of the drugs that they've put into the hair dye and the drinks and the gas, and there's a line where Marty's like, isn't Kurt acting weird, though? He's acting like a lughead, like, you know. And so they're actually all really educated. It's like he's a sociology major, but he got into the jock horror movie stereotype because of the drugs that they were giving him. Like, that's what the ancient ones want to see, right?
Yeah.
And they were giving aphrodisiacs and stuff to Jules, her character. And that's why she was making her so horny. And there's a part where Marty mistakes the wolf head, that's the taxidermied wolf on the wall, and calls it a moose head because Evil Dead, it was a moose head, you know, like little references like that.
That's clever.
That are so neat and fun, but it does work. Like it's horror in the sense of like the kills are effective because you care about these people and they're grisly. But at no point is it like scary per se.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a movie, kind of like 13 Ghosts.
Yeah.
Which is a fucking great like horror movie that I would love to revisit. I haven't seen that in 15 years. But just like it's kind of cool, and like there's all these different like assailants, and it's almost like lore, you know. Super neat, especially this bonkers ass third act. This is actually one of my favorite movies. I love it so much. So
One of your favorite movies.
This is a damn good movie.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
So everything starts off with the water cooler with Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford. And they're having like a
Sitterson and Hadley,
a normal chat about their, you know, their wives and stuff. I think one of them's trying to get pregnant. And so she's already like baby proofing the house. Like, dude, it's in the drawers. And she did the upper cabinets. Like, he'll be fucking 20 years old before he can reach those. Like, it's all just like normal dude chat. And you don't know what's going on yet if it's your first watch, but they're talking about how Stockholm already failed and went down. And so they're referencing all these different like international horror genres as well, because like they kind of have a flavor, you know, especially Japanese horror in particular.
Yeah.
And it's just Japan and us now. But they're all cocky and confident about it, you know.
But Japan has a perfect record.
Yeah, they've never failed.
They've never failed.
And only one of them has to win, right? Mm-hmm. Has to at least like appease the ancient ones.
I love that they're like, hey, but we're still number two. And I forget which one of them says it, but like, hey, 1998 was chem department's fault. All right.
Yeah. And like, the girl is from the chem department.
Yeah.
but then the title card, the horror style, it comes out of fucking nowhere. And it's hilarious.
Hey, you want to come over Monday?
Yeah. It's so awesome. And that particular title card is another reference. It's Michael Haneke's Funny Games. That they're stealing that title card from. And it's so funny. So funny. Speaking of funny. We cut to what I call panty dancing and packing. It's one of our main characters in her panties, just packing for the road trip. Her friend comes in. She dyed her hair blonde. Hemsworth's actually really smart. Again, they referenced that early on.
Yeah.
And then panties is trying to get over the professor.
Dana. Yeah. Dana.
I have to read my notes as I read them.
Yeah. Dana was dating a professor, but they've recently broken up.
And she's a good artist, too.
She is. Yeah. But like Kurt, which is Chris Hemsworth's character, and his girlfriend, Jules, who just dyed her hair blonde, have been trying to want to hook her up with his friend Holden.
It's his cousin.
That's his cousin?
He claims.
Oh, okay.
Because at the end...
I thought it was just like someone he played football with.
Well, at the end, Dana has that line where like, I don't even think Kurt has a cousin. Meaning like all of this was completely fabricated.
Yeah, because they're going to Kurt's cousin's cabin in the woods.
Yes, that's what it is.
For the weekend.
Not Holden is the cousin, but the cabin is the cousin's.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But
the
cabin isn't his cousin's. It was all fabricated.
Cabin and the cousins?
They were tricked. I hope we're making sense.
Cousin's cabin in the woods? Kurt's cousin's cabin in the woods?
And then my dude, Marty, pulls up. Blowing on his thermos bong.
Got this like Tervis thermos bong that he's like fashioned somehow.
It's so great.
It's honestly like really impressive.
It's such a baller ass way to pull up.
And it's such a good thing to cops introduce these characters. Cops would never
pull over a guy smoking a bong. What is the line that he says? They fear him or something like
that. They fear him, yeah. Yeah, cops will never pull over a man with a bong. They fear this man.
Yeah. I love it so much.
But I love the way they introduce all these characters because they're not, I don't think they're your stereotypical horror movie characters. Like they really, like you said, Kurt, maybe like Chris Hemsworth, maybe like this big muscular dude, but he's really smart. He's really funny. He has very good chemistry with Jules. Like you believe they're an actual like relationship that's like on it. Like I would hang out with them. They seem fun.
They seem like, yeah, it was a fun trip. They got their family's RV. And by the way, you probably have to delete this story from the show, but I wanted to tell you, the bong reminded me of something. Okay. This guy used to work for me at the restaurant many years ago, and he was like this. He looked like, who's that comedian who's kind of like, he's thick. He's got that gap in his teeth.
Louis Henderson?
He looked like him. Yes, Louis. Looked dead on him, but like 20. Okay. And he was the goofiest little guy. And he used to drive around with this 3-foot bong in his little Honda Civic and smoke it.
Okay.
And we all made fun of him for that. Like, dude, get a bowl or something at least. Like, what are you doing? And he got caught by the cops. He was in his car smoking that 3-foot bong and for some reason decided to jerk off. And passed out. So the cops pull up and he's got his pants and underwear around his ankles, asleep, holding this giant bong.
Hell yeah, dude.
And they didn't even arrest him. They just made fun of him.
As good. How do you explain? Like, yeah, sorry, officer, I was not smoking. I just fell asleep jerking off in my car.
I don't know, but obviously
did he come into work the next day?
I like, didn't know what you were about to ask, and I was like, I don't know, Steve. Yes, everybody at work knew because the cops came in and like told everybody, like, hey, we caught, we caught your coworker asleep jerking off in his car with a bong.
Was he like on the property?
Because I worked at the nearby, yeah. It was like after work kind of thing.
Hey, was he in like a uniform or something? Yes. Like we should probably let
he was in uniform, but also like we ran a bar. So we were in close contact with all the police locally for many reasons all the time. Okay, they came in all the time and it was just like, hey, we got your little buddy out there, you know? So we were like, no fucking way. And it was fun and games. It was good times.
Oh my gosh.
That's what Marty reminded me of.
I'm not deleting that story.
I just wanted to make sure.
That's too good.
So anyway.
What a legend.
The thermos bong is fun. And there's a cool moment where Chris Hemsworth, Kurt, is like, hey, you're not bringing that fucking bong onto my dad's bus or whatever. And he just like turns it back into a cup.
Yeah, it's like a collapse. Like it's this enormous bong. It's like what? Like 4 feet long?
Yeah, it's a big one.
Collapses into the actual. And
even the pipe part goes back into the handle. It's like, I remember at the time when this came out, I already had quit smoking, but I was like, dang, I wish I had one of those. So then there's a secret agent man on the roof watching them leave. And you still don't know what the hell is going on the first watch.
The nest is empty.
And we in the RV, Marty mentions how there's no reception, no cell phone signals or anything like that at this cabin, which is great, convenient for the plot. And he's kind of a tinfoil hat kind of guy, right? Like society needs to crumble. Like they're putting chips on our babies' heads and all that stuff. So it characterizes him for being somebody who's going to figure things out or suspect unusual things rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. And also that he thinks society needs to end. We're all just too chicken shit to do it.
Yes. Very key. Very key. I'm back to base with Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins. They're still talking about things, you know, how they're going to start the betting pool soon.
Yeah, there's a new security guard that's guarding them, and they start fucking with him immediately. Like, the only thing you should, it's a pretty normal operation. No need to be weirded out. He on the other hand, will only answer to Honey Toes.
And by the way, there's a joke with this new security guard that I've never clocked before. I've probably seen this movie 7 times. I lost it today when I noticed the little detail. I want to see if you pick up on it.
Is it in the scene?
No. It's a little bit later. And then our crew, they stop for gas at the horror trope rundown gas station with the mean racist, sexist gas station man.
Oh, do we mention Holden? Holden's joining them.
Yeah, Holden's there. That guy I thought was the cousin at first. Okay, we talked about him later.
Yeah, he's like, what's his major? He's a... some sort of like literature.
He's the smartest one, but I forget.
Yeah, he's the quote unquote smart one.
Yeah, the intellectual guy. Mm-hmm. I love all the like Civil War jokes and stuff, especially from Marty at the gas station guy. Yeah. Like, oh, with the war, brother against brother. And, you know, it's really good stuff.
Yeah, because they're trying to, the cabin they're going to is called the Buckner cabin or something.
Yes.
And so this creepy old dude who's like,
don't go down that road.
Super creepy and weird, like, the Buckner place, all these murders happened there, you whore. Like, he's like super he's like aggressively misogynistic towards the two women.
Kurt's like, what?
And the thing I love about it is this dude is like a horror trope, right, where he's being super creepy, super misogynistic and all that, but the four main characters, like specifically Marty and Kurt and Holden, are like, whoa, dude, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Relax.
Whoa. Like, Marty especially is like giving him lip, which is weird because you wouldn't think the stoner would be confrontational in these type of movies. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just constantly breaking norms for what you think.
Especially the fact that they're all smart and stuff. Yeah. And that's what I love so much about this movie is that it's the drugs and the fabrications that the office people, whatever, the business, the federal government is making it like that.
Yeah.
And the ancient ones are the horror fans, you know, because there's a line at one point where he's like, let me see them boobies. And then the security guard's like, what the fuck, man? And he's like, hey, man, we're not the only ones watching. And it's the audience is who they're talking about. But like, we're the ancient ones. And there's certain things we expect and like to see in these movies. And I'm saying it's like almost genius level. I really enjoy it.
Because how many times are you watching a horror movie and you're like, nobody acts like that. Nobody would do this. That's not how people are. But that's kind of part of the fun of it. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Specifically, there's a part where Kurt comes in and he's like, we all stick together. We're going over here. And then the office people are like, fuck, 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 fuck. And, you know, put more gas in chamber 3 or whatever. And then all of a sudden he's like, actually, we need to split up. And Marty, who's not affected by any of the drugs, goes, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because it's dumb. Why would you split up? You know what I mean? Yeah. I love moments like that. Mm-hmm.
Why was Marty not affected? They said at one point, but I didn't catch it.
It's because he smokes the weed.
So because he smokes so much weed, he's not affected by the drugs?
They were like, yeah, whatever he's smoking makes him immune to everything we're doing, is what they say.
Great.
Which is, it's funny.
You think they would have a contingency for that to get the fool, the stoner.
They didn't know about that strand, man.
And the pineapple that's sticky.
Yeah, that sticky icky was too potent. They didn't know. He's constantly smoking it. I mean, he's going in.
Yeah.
He's a man after my own heart. But then we get this cool shot of them going through the tunnel, which... it reminds me of the Nada Tunnel at Red River Gorge. Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
It's literally a one lane tunnel of like through the rock, the mountain that you have to honk your horn to make sure nobody's coming the opposite direction. Cause again, it's super one lane. It looks just like that. It's wild. And then we get this like shot of this hawk and it's like, why are they showing this hawk? It's kind of a weird thing. I didn't
know this was an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, and then it flies into this like digital wall, like this force field thing. And you're like, oh, cool way to show that.
They're keeping them trapped out there.
They arrive at the cabin. There's a giant monster painting in Holden's room that he freaks him out. So he takes it down and reveals a two-way mirror. And he starts watching Dana, who begins to undress. And like he's fighting against his base desires because he doesn't want to watch her. He knows that's creepy. But he like steps out of frame and then comes back like, And then at the last second, his conscience comes like, into play.
Ah, I'm sorry. No. Yeah.
And he hits the wall like, hey, stop. And then they swap rooms. And she has the same battle with herself because he starts. And by the way,
he knows what he's doing.
Huge flex on him.
He knows what he's doing.
You know she hasn't put the painting up yet. And he starts stripping down immediately. Yeah. My guy.
Yeah.
My guy. But there's a cool line where Marty's like, it was pioneer days. So you had to build your own interrogation room because it makes no fucking sense that this room's in the house.
Yeah. Because Marty knows this whole place is sus from the jump.
Yes. And then the camera pulls back, revealing like the security room of the government agency. They're all on camera. Every room's bugged.
It's Big Brother up in this place.
Mm-hmm. Big Brother.
But they're going to increase libido and cognition gas.
Yep.
And they say they put some sort of substance in Jewel's hair dye to affect her cognition so that they can make her dumb.
Yep. Make her a whore.
And they were like, you know, Citizen and Hadley start high five and like, ah, genius in the hair dye. Whoa.
Yeah, way to go, Kim department. And because they switch rooms, there's a cool little scene where the office people are like, oh, scenario adjustment, you know, so, meaning that everything's perfectly fine tuned to a T. I think that's when we get the bit. The Harbinger is on line two.
Mordecai is his name.
I tried, but he's really pushy. Hey, Morty, what's up there?
Their ears have stopped. They are the gods, fools. Cleanse the world of their ignorance and sin. Wait. Am I on speakerphone?
No. So fucking funny.
The fool nearly derailed the convocation with his ignorance.
Even the security guard laughing in the background was what did it for me.
Watching Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford talk to this guy is so fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I love it. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. It can be tough out there as we try to navigate the many twists and turns that life throws our way. Not every problem we face has an obvious or easy solution, but talking through these issues can always bring major benefits. So whether you're dealing with a career change, relationship help, or just getting used to your new normal, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate life, so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. I myself have benefited from therapy. I have benefited from BetterHelp. I was struggling to find myself and figure out who I was post-divorce. BetterHelp matched me with an amazing therapist who taught me all about codependency, what it was, and ways I can combat it and realize my whole true self. So if it sounds like therapy is the right move for you, then give BetterHelp a try. It's online, convenient, flexible, and can work with your schedule. Filling out a brief questionnaire is all it takes to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists at any time. To start your own therapy journey, visit betterhelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's the month of September, and with a new month comes a new opportunity for us to be thankful for all of the stream fiends who help us at Streaming Things keep the lights on and make this show what it is. So let's give a super patron shout out to some of our most ardent supporters on patreon.com/streamingthings. Thank you so much to Becky the Farmer, Kaylee Sampson, Stanton Valentino, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Optimus, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento7, Jay Scramo, AK Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Butthorn, Conrad, David Malfara, Rabid Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Emmy, Joe Velez, Valerie, John Collins, Amber McVeigh, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rowe, Jadinglage Morgoon, Jen Robinson, Kate, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Ashley Powers, Stephen V, Casey McCain, and Enza. And with that, back to the show.
And then the crew goes swimming, and while they're doing that, the office start taking bets on which of the monsters they will end up accidentally choosing. And they do this every year because they have to make a choice of their own free will, right? And then they say, let's get this party started. As soon as it cuts back to our main crew getting their own party started, they start to drink. And I guess they brought kegs of beer and all kinds of shit. Mm-hmm. They play Truth or Dare. And Marty tells Jules to make out with the moose. Make out with that moose, which is a wolf, in fact. Which she does incredibly effectively.
We talked about the betting windows, right?
Yeah.
Did you see what the betting options were behind them?
On the whiteboard? Yeah. That's where we got the molesting angry tree from Evil Dead.
Do you want me to read all of them?
Sure.
We got, let me see. Let me go up to the top. We got Alien Beast, Angry Molesting Tree, The Bride, Clowns, Deadites, Demons.
Deadites, another Evil Dead reference.
Dismemberment Goblins, The Doctors, Dolls. Oh, it should be noted that the accounting department bets on the doctors. The kitchen staff bets on the dolls. There's Dragon Bat, The Giant, who at the zoology department's betting on, Giant Snakes, Internal Logistics, Hell Lord, Sitterson has bet on Hell Lord. The Huron Research and Development voted on that one. Jack-O-Lantern by the Security Force. There's just an option called Kevin. Merman, which of course Hadley bets on because Hadley likes the merman.
Oh, there is a Kevin.
The Mummy. Psychology department betted on Mummy. Mutants voted on by the demolition department. The Reanimated betted on by the administration department. Reptilius, Sasquatch / Wendigo / Yeti. The Scarecrow folk, who have been voted on by DNA archives. Sexy witches. The archives department bet on them. The Snowman bet on by the communications department. Sugar Plum Fairies, Twins.
Twins and twins.
Unicorn engineering bet on them. Vampires distribution. Werewolf finance department. Witches, different from sexy witches.
Yes.
Operations department bets on witches. Wraiths, zombie redneck torture family, and then of course zombies,
which is who we ended up with, I think.
Yeah. And Maintenance and Ronald the intern bet on zombie redneck torture family.
And she got upset because they're zombies. Yeah, no, the chemical, but they're different.
Yeah. The chemical department were like, they are zombies. No, they're not the redneck torture zombies.
Come on now. Don't start to cheat. Yes. By the way, the fucking unicorn is the only thing. Like, imagine if that was the one that they chose. Like, the unicorn's not killing all of them. There's no way. It's just a regular horse with a horn.
That's a dangerous ass horse. Horses are fucking scary, man. Yeah, have you seen a horse close up?
Not as scary as three zombie redneck torture family members.
I don't know. Those things can run. They can outrun you.
I'm just saying.
And they're strapped.
I think they could take that horse.
I don't know. How are they going to take down that horse?
I don't know. Like with a sledgehammer or
you
something?
You got to catch it first.
Not if it's coming at you with its horn. You sidestep like a fucking, what's it called?
Oh, you.
Olay, one of those guys.
You look at me and with a straight face, if a horse is galloping at you and it has a sword attached to its head and it's going like, you're not scared to death?
Sure, I'm scared, but I'm going to stand my ground if I have a sledgehammer.
Stand your ground laws with a sledgehammer.
What are those? If I'm a fucking matador with a hammer, it's going down.
But a hammer is like a hard thing to wield.
I'm just saying, like, the rest of it is like crazy, out of this world.
Also, it's a
unicorn.
There's
werewolves. A unicorn is magical. Zombies. A unicorn is just a bull with one horn.
It's a magical beast. Who's to say that a hammer would even hurt it?
I'm just saying, from what I saw, it didn't do anything crazy. It just ran. We saw it impale a person.
Yeah, we did.
And that's all it did. It was just a horse with a horn. It is literally a single horned bull. It is less dangerous than a bull.
But can we both agree that if you see Kevin running at you?
Oh, I'm done. I'm toast. I can't take Kevin.
No, but yeah. No.
So he tells Jules to make out with a moose and then says, Dana. And then Kurt's kind of shitty to her because, again, the medicine's starting to affect him. He's becoming more of a dude bro. And so he's like, truth, I'm just skipping the part where you say dare and then don't want to do it. And then ask for truth. So she asks for dare. At that moment, the cellar door busts open. Another reference to Evil Dead. And they dare Dana to go down there. And then they all go down there. There's creepy shit everywhere. They're all about to summon a different monster. Like, you can see Jules about to put on a necklace. Dana's playing with this like little Rubik's cube that you see the guy. I think that's the Hell Lord.
Yeah, the Hellraiser type.
Which character. Has to be a Hellraiser reference. Yeah.
The idea is that they have to choose what kills them.
Yes.
Unconsciously. Because they just see this like basement full of trinkets. And they're all looking at it. Yeah.
And at that moment, they start reading the diary of Patience, one of the Buckner family members. And I love the line again. This is a reference to how like a popular horror trope where Marty's like, I'm drawing a line in the fucking sand. Do not read the Latin.
Yeah.
Which is like, of course, don't do that. Right.
Why would you?
Yeah. But they do. They summon the Buckners, the zombie redneck torture family. And then we cut to the office where they're all happy handing out the celebrating the bet winner.
We have a winner. It's the Buckners. Congrats. Go to maintenance.
And everything in our stable is a remnant of the old world, right? So they have this giant stable of all these monsters and beasts.
I love there's a scene earlier when they were getting all the bets. There was Ronald the intern that like changes his bet last minute to this one.
Yeah.
And so he's like in the background, I won.
So happy. They also mention then show a clip of the Japanese team again and mention again that they have 100% clearance rate. We cut back to Jules being a little slutty salute.
I keep interrupting you, but I love how they Hadley's pouting. Because he's like, he had the conch in his hands. He just wanted the merman. That's so all bad. He wants. He wants to see the merman.
It's very important for how he goes out that he keeps harping on the merman.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
He had it in his hands.
Yeah. He was so close to winning. So Jules is dancing around and like flirting with literally everybody. And again, everyone at this moment is becoming horror stereotypes now, mm-hmm. except for Marty, who's immune,
but even
he's very confused.
Even Dana and I think Holden are kind of like, something's a little off here.
Yeah, they're a little more reticent, I think the word would be.
But yeah, Jules and Kurt are definitely like succumbing to the stuff that they've been pumping into the cabin.
Yep. Yep. Pop-Tarts?
He loves Pop-Tarts.
Marty, that killed me. Jules and Kurt go into the woods to start banging, and it cuts to the office, and there's like 96 dudes all watching the TV screen and eventually they're like, all right, break it up, guys, break it up, have some respect. But then Bradley Whitford's character is like, let's see them boobies.
Well, they're, you can see that they're like masters of controlling the space, because at one point,
the temperature.
Kurt's trying to initiate this sex in the woods. He's like, no, it's chilly and it's too cold. And so they raise the temperature by a couple degrees. They turn on some moonlight. They start pumping the pheromone mists into the...
To make it the perfect little fuck spot.
To make them all like super horny.
Horny. Yes. And then at that point, that's when we get the line, you know, let's see the boobies. Then we're not the only ones watching because the security... And then this is the moment I've never noticed before. She takes off her top, reveals herself, right? It's a long beat. And then it cuts to the office guy. So you got Richard Jenkins, Bradley Whitford, and the new security guy. He's covering his boner with his clipboard.
Oh, no, I didn't catch
I've
that.
I've never seen that before. The security guy's got his clipboard over the front of his pants because he has a husband's bulge.
He's got a husband's bulge.
It is so funny. At this point, Jules is violently killed. Mm-hmm. It is kind of wild, you know?
Yeah, the zombie torture redneck family show up and interrupt their love sesh. They're fucking...
Stabs her hand.
Yeah, they stab her hand. They stab Kurt at one point. They throw a bear trap at him.
Yeah, one guy's got like a bear trap on a chain. That's his weapon, which is kind of creative. That's unique.
It's kind of dope.
And then cuts her fucking head off.
Yeah, right in front of Kurt.
Her whole ass head.
Yeah, it's very sad.
As it ever was. Because upon the death of the first person, they like pray. They have like a little pentagram, and they do this like little speech, as it ever was, back at the office. Then we cut to Marty.
You get like this little hint of like these people, kind of the reality of what they do almost sets in, because this is the only part really in the movie where they get sad. They're like, man, it kind of does suck that we have to do this.
For sure.
Because in their minds, they have to do it or else the world ends.
They have gallows humor about their job, is my read on them.
Yeah.
But they're trying to keep the world from ending.
Yeah.
And it's the way to stay sane.
Yeah.
But we cut to Marty getting high, reading Little Nemo. Because prior to this, he said, I'm going to go read a book with pictures.
Yeah.
And he was not lying about that.
I love how there's always somebody whispering. I guess somebody's on the intercom that like whispers shit that they can hear.
Well, he's supposed to be really susceptible to this, but is the weeds keeping him immune? Kind of.
But he's a little susceptible here because he's like, go outside. He's like, what the fuck? Someone's talking to me.
It says go for a walk.
Yeah. And he's like, you're not the boss of me. I'm gonna go for a walk. You think I'm a puppet?
It's so good.
And yeah, Holden and Dana are now making out.
And as he's walking by Holden and Dana on the couch, he goes, he's got a husband's bulge.
Because that was in the diary that they read from Patience, was talking about the husband's bulge.
Yeah, it was super creepy, by the way. And then Jules' head gets thrown in Dana's face because she goes to go out. Because Kurt kind of runs in while...
Yeah, Marty goes outside. He's trying to urinate. Kurt runs, like, shows up. He's all bloody. He's like, dude, run. Get back in the house. And they run in. And right before they can close the door, the one redneck throws Jules' head at
Dana. Well, it's because Dana opens it. Like, wait, no, we can't leave Dana. Mm-hmm. And then that's when the head's revealed. But I love the part where Kurt straight up clotheslines Patience as he's running by.
that's a little girl
with one arm.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah.
Clotheslines her.
It's so funny. And then he goes, no matter what happens, we have to stay together. And the office is like, oh, fuck that.
We should split them up.
Wait, we should split up, cover more ground. And then Marty goes, really?
Go to your rooms and lock him in.
Yeah. At that point is when Marty finds the camera because he knocks over a lamp. And then one of the hillbilly.
Judah Buckner.
Yeah, Judah, saving the day. One of the redneck zombie guys rips him out through the window, but he grabs his bong before he does, and he has like a quick bong fight. And then we see the death, quote unquote, of Marty because he gets stabbed in the back.
He gets dragged over a hill, and then blood spurts under the hill, and they all think he's gone.
They all think he's dead at the home base as well because they pull like the sacrifice lever and quit worrying about him. Mm-hmm. But then they find the black room that Patience referenced in her diary, and it's Dana and Holden down there by themselves, I think. Holden gets bear trapped, and she ends up...
That can't feel good.
No, that's got to be terrible.
That's got to suck. Because then you get bear trapped, and he kind of like all hoists the way up.
Yeah. It's got to rip some ligaments or whatever.
Yeah.
Casey, tell us what muscles are there.
Yeah, Dana goes ham on this Buckner zombie redneck person. She kills him. Yeah, she stabs him a whole bunch.
Then they flee.
I love there's one. They cut away to Stitterson and Hadley. And I think Hadley says something like, oh, God, do you remember when you could just throw a girl in a volcano?
The good old days.
The good old days when this was easy.
And then he goes, how old do you think I am?
Yeah.
Like this, like workplace humor, but about this kind of stuff. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And then we see the Japanese fail at this point. Like they turn the demon into a sweet frog.
I love this bit because they're watching the Japan fail and their play at this, and Stitterson just starts flipping off the monitor that's just a bunch of Japanese kids like, fuck you, yeah. Fuck you, yeah. Fuck you.
Not a single death,
a total wash. And then they all get like pumped up, like, all right, we are bringing the pain.
Yeah. But then at the same time, they're all fleeing now. So Kurt, Holden, and Dana are on the RV heading out of town, and they start panicking because the tunnel has not blown up yet. Oh, shit, they're going to make it out, right?
The tunnel should have blown up hours ago.
So Richard Jenkins starts running around to the different department. He blames the engineering crew. Like, why didn't you blow up the fucking tunnel? Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever fully understood before that the reason the tunnel didn't blow up is because Marty was fucking with the... electronic box, and he short-circuited it, and that's why they didn't have access.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that either.
Because the engineering at some point is like, hey, it's really not our fault, because Richard Jenkins is like, yeah, it's okay, I fixed it. And he's like, no, seriously, like something was going wrong, it wasn't responding. And then when you see Marty later with Dana, he's like, I found this junction box, and so he was already screwing with stuff.
Yeah, oh, that's off smart.
Behind the scenes.
That's
yeah.
smart.
But then we get one of the scene Andy loves. It's one of his favorite scenes in all of cinema, because you have to know Andy's sense of humor, is when Kurt tries to jump the tunnel with the motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. So they blow the tunnel just in time.
Yeah.
And the way the canyon is, you know, Kurt thinks he can get on this dirt bike and like ramp over it and make it. He's like, oh, I've made jumps longer than that before. But if you remember,
because the hawk,
there's a force field keeping them in, but Kurt and company do not know of the force field.
And as an audience member, the first time through, you've kind of forgotten that by now.
Yeah. And also, especially if you watch it today, that's Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
He's like the biggest thing in Hollywood, right?
Yes. You don't expect him to just go out so unceremoniously after such an epic speech.
Yeah.
Because I'll be
back for you. I'm going to bring all the cops. I'm going to bring the military.
And then he goes, for Jules. And it's so
just wrecks into a wall, basically.
Andy loves it so much.
And then he just like
you like, can, and it makes you watch him just hit for hundreds of feet, and every time they hit the force field it goes zzz, zzz, zzz. So you can see that he's just bonking into it over and over and over.
Yeah,
it's wild. It's a wild choice. I respect it.
Marty was right. It was the puppeteers.
But then Holden gets got pretty soon after they get back in the RV. They like throw something through the windshield at him or something?
No, they're driving away, and Holden just wants to. Does he just want to keep driving and driving and driving?
Something like that.
Because he thinks they can just leave, but Dana's actually getting wise to what Marty's been trying to tell them this whole time. Like, no, we're here for a reason. There's puppeteers, something's going on. And one of the zombie redneck people had gotten into the RV and stabbed him in the back while he was driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight through. So he's gone.
Holden dead. And in the fight, the RV is plunged into a pond, a lake.
Mm-hmm.
But she's able to get out.
She starts fighting like with one of the main Buckners there. But we also hear something neat on the office end, because they're already celebrating.
Yeah, because in the whole thing, all of these people have to die. But the Virgin's death, who Dana is the role of the Virgin in this ritual. The Virgin, it's optional if the Virgin lives or dies.
Because of the trope of the final girl, because sometimes in horror she lives.
Yeah.
So good.
Photo fucking finished. They're like so jazz.
And as long as it's last and she suffers.
I love this bit where Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins are watching her fight with this giant redneck zombie person. And Bradley Whitford's like, oh man, you know, I'm really starting to really root for this girl. I mean, all the stuff like, tequila is my lady.
Yes.
People and show up with tequila.
They start celebrating, and you can see in the background that she's getting her ass beat, you know, but you don't really even like, it doesn't focus on it at all.
Yeah.
And this is where
the whole time they're celebrating, you can see her getting her ass kicked.
Yeah.
In the
she's just like getting like suplexed and thrown off the dock.
It's like comical.
Yes. And this is the scene where the engineering says, no, we lost power from upstairs. And then Bradley Whitford's like, upstairs, which doesn't make any sense because upstairs is the woods, the cabin. Mm-hmm. And that was Marty.
And this whole scene where everyone's celebrating is kind of super meta, because at one point Bradley Whitford runs into like some other people who work there who are like, oh my God, we are such big fans. The way you guys... And it reminded me of the way people talk to like film directors. Like, I love your work. The way you do this. He's like, oh, please. It's a group effort.
Because they're really high up. Mm-hmm. Sigourney Weaver's the only one above them, I think.
Mm-hmm. It'd have been cooler with a merman.
Yeah. He loves that merman, man. It was so close. But then at this point, Marty saves Jules. Comes out of nowhere. Kicks that dude's ass, right?
With a super bong.
I was going to say, oh, he does have his bong is what he uses.
Yeah. But before this, the red phone rings in the office, and everyone stops celebrating because I guess it's a big deal if the red phone rings. And Bradley Whitford answers it, and he's like, what? No, we killed everybody. Wait, which one? Implying like, oh, Marty. Someone's alive? Oh, Marty's still alive. They didn't kill him yet. The ritual is still on.
And then Marty pulls Dana into the, he saves Dana. And they start going into the grave where the Buckners came out of. And she's like, what? Going in there? But he's already been in there before. There's an elevator in there. There's a body there. He's like, I had to dismember that guy with a trowel. What have you been up to? And he's like, look, I think I can get this elevator to take us down.
And I love how there's this ongoing joke of that dead zombie's hand keeps like fucking with him.
Yeah.
Like, no, stop it, dead zombie arm.
And then they see the werewolf in the stables. They see a lot of the other monsters, this creepy little ballet girl with like nothing for a face but a mouth. Mm-hmm. And then that's when it hits Dana. We chose. They made us choose the monster because she sees the little trinket that the Hell Lord has that she was playing with earlier.
Yeah.
And the weed has been immunizing Marty, one of the employees in the office says in the next scene, all the troops move in. It's like the SWAT team for the monster government. Yeah.
They're basically like, just open the elevator door and kill Marty.
That's like, all you have to do at this point.
Because like if she dies before him, the ritual's fucked up. So they're just wanting to kill him.
Yes. And our task is to placate the ancient ones, right? Like, I think it's Sigourney Weaver that gets on like the intercom to try to explain things. And at this point, there's a little bit of the reveal, the exposition. And whether or not you think this movie is a 9 or a 10 out of 10, like I do, or you were having a good time, but you hate it, hinges on the fact of whether you accept the all out absolute fucking batshit bonkers chaos that is this third act.
Yeah.
I love it. There's so many monsters. It's so fun. It's so neat. It's so gory because now you have all these like SWAT team people that you can just dismember and go batshit on and go all out.
And it's like so over the top gory. It's comical. Like I don't feel it. Like I never watch it and be like, oh, that's gross. It's just kind of fucking hilarious because there's blood flying everywhere.
Yeah. Like there's like a centaur and this giant snake monster. The werewolf's going hammer time. The bat dude. All kinds of cool things. Some of the kills are quite cool. Mm-hmm. The unicorn is the only one where I'm like, that's fucking silly.
don't say that out loud. You're
terrified of unicorns.
I'm just terrified of horses, man. Those things are huge.
But all the monsters come out. It's chaos. The scarecrows you mentioned earlier, they're the ones that kill the security guy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the boner. That. But he pulls out, he does the whole, like, let me pull a grenade and take
him
out.
Yeah, which actually knocks out Bradley Whitford. Which
he kind of gets Bradley Whitford killed. And
I'm never really sure what Richard Dinkins is trying to do because he's like, it's now we're on lockdown. I have to type in the code. I don't know what he's even doing.
They're trying to open up a escape hatch so they can get out of there.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, that's all they're because they're on lockdown. They've kind of locked down their little main booth that they're
room.
In.
Yeah,
but there's a secret hatch that they're trying to open up so that they can get into the catacombs and escape that way.
Yeah. Oh, because he does get through and it runs into Dana in a second. But first, the merman is the one to get Bradley Whitford's character. And he goes, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Which is like the grossest, like almost worst one, too. Because like, meh, meh, meh. I hated it.
I love it because it's just the slow little like gross thing that just kind of waddles. I'm just saying,
if I was going to pick one of those things to kill me, it would not be that one.
Yeah, because then it's going to just eject your blood through its blowhole.
Did you see? I don't know if you can see, like through the chaos. Part of the fun is watching all the different weird kills and stuff. But did you see like the thing that was like, holding one of the people down by its shoulders and just spitting acid into the dude's face?
Yeah, yeah.
That was terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Or like the random clown.
Oh, the clown with the lady around. Was trying to shoot, like the Pennywise guy.
Yeah.
That was terrible, too. Yeah. Yeah. Not fun.
But Lynn, the chemical department lady, she just gets grabbed by a tentacle like monster. Like a
fucking kraken.
There's just like a kraken that comes down from the ceiling and lifts her up and
I kind of
brings
her
into the ceiling.
Yeah. That one affected me a little bit.
It's like, oh, no, not Lynn. But yeah, Richard Jenkins is the only one to make it through the escape hatch, but he doesn't go very far.
No, not even a step. He jumps into the bunker and gets immediately stabbed in the heart by Dana. And at that point, Marty gives her his gun and goes, here, this is easier for killing.
Yeah.
But his last words are kill him, talking about Marty.
Yeah, because he's like, at this point, we just have to save the world. Everything's going to hell. You just have to kill this dude and the world is saved.
But they don't really know all that yet. All he just says is kill him. But then we learn about the five tropes. Sigourney Weaver pops out. They're in this like the actual ritual room and you can see the ancient ones beneath them, the gods that used to control the world. And all we know is that it always requires youth, which is a joke about how horror movies are always like about teenagers and college students, right? Every single time it is. There's the whore, the athlete, the scholar, the fool, and the virgin. And she goes, virgin? We work with what we got.
Yeah.
And she says, you can die with them or you can die for them, to Marty. And he says, oh, both those options are awesome, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one do I choose?
Yeah, but she's pretty much appealing to Dana, like, yes, you have to kill him. You have 8 minutes before the sun comes up.
Every soul on Earth will die a slow, agonizing death.
Yeah, unless you kill him in the next 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And Dana raises her gun and aims it at Marty.
And he goes, oh, wow. Yeah. Like, he's so offended that she would choose the entire planet over him. But then a werewolf attacks Dana.
Yeah, Marty sees the werewolf creeping up on her, and he doesn't say anything. And so the werewolf attacks her before she can shoot him. And then he and Sigourney Weaver kind of fight for the gun, and they're kind of fighting each other. And this whole time, little Patience shows back up. She wanders up. She's she's got a hatchet. And she just hatchets Sigourney Weaver in the face.
In the back of the skull. Yeah. And then he just kicks them both into the chasm.
Yep.
And at that point, the werewolf had fled because Barty shot it to get it off of Dana. Mm-hmm. And Dana's like, I'm sorry.
They're both like a bloody
mess. Probably wouldn't have shot you anyway, but I'm sorry. And they sit there and wait for the end of the world and smoke a J.
He rolls up a doobie. Hey, I don't think Kurt even has a cousin.
Giant evil god. I mean, I wish I could see him. I know, right?
Like, they're so high.
Yeah. It's such a good ending. And, like, I think it plays a little differently 11 years later, where I think some of us are more in the maybe this human experiment was not a great idea headspace. Mm-hmm. After, you know, all that happened in the late teens of the 2000s with politically and whatnot.
Early 2020s.
But then also the pandemic. And I don't know. Maybe it's just me and I'm actually more cynical than I've ever been at this moment in my life.
What is one of those?
This ending hit different. Like, fuck it.
It's a great, like, moral dilemma. Like, is it worth saving humanity if you have to give up your humanity to do it?
Right. Sure. Right? Sure.
And that's always a really good thing. Me personally, fuck them kids.
What do you mean?
I'd kill them.
Oh, you kill.
I would have shot Marty right in the face.
For sure. Because you also get to live.
Yeah, I also get to live. But also, like, every innocent soul, man, woman, child also gets to live.
Sure.
And I believe in humanity, Chris. I am what you call a humanist. I believe even though there's darkness in humanity, there's also light in humanity. I think I like to believe in our better angels and give peace a chance rather than just fuck it, kill everybody.
I believe in a thing called love.
Just listen to the rhythm of the heart. That's the darkness.
That's right, baby. Ironically.
That's the darkness.
No, I kid you. Like I said, I'm just more cynical than I usually am this past week or so. And I just watching this movie in that headspace, I was like,
I get it. I get
it. Because also there's a lot of like themes of like other people pulling the strings, mm-hmm. making you into the stereotype of a person. And, you know, maybe that's reading in too deep. It's just horror tropes that they're making fun of. But I think there's a little bit of judgments on society in general in this movie you could pull out that I really enjoy.
But it also feeds into the idea, the metaphor that the ancient ones are the viewer. And so it's like if the viewer is caught, if the movies we watch were actual living, breathing people that were forced to do this stuff for our entertainment, it would be like, yeah, I don't want to give them what they want. So let's give them this ending that they don't want.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's really, really smart and clever.
Yeah. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
Kloop, you're the best.
I hope that made up for the shit show disappointment of your big week falling apart before you. I know I, for one, am so glad you asked me to watch that. It's one of my favorites. Wish Andy was here again. Can't say that enough. But I hope you enjoyed that. You deserve it. You deserve happiness. You know? You're the Dana in this scenario, mm-hmm. you know?
The virgin.
We work with what we got. So glad you chose that one. Excited for next week's movie, which I believe is Super 8.
Would you be the stoner or the fool?
I think I would.
Are we just a couple of fools?
I think I would be a fool.
I think I would be a fool too.
Yeah, we're both two Martys here.
Yeah, we're a couple of fools.
No, we're definitely not the athlete. And I don't think we would qualify as the scholar.
Definitely
I could be the whore.
You go, I would like to see that movie where it's like very progressive. Like, this is the blonde bimbo.
Yes. Chris. Getting my cheeks clapped and flea bottom. That's one of the funniest things that's ever happened is that conversation, I think, too, on our show.
Yeah. It gets brought up a lot. Cheeks being clapped quite often.
Why shouldn't they?
Right.
But I appreciate you all. I love you all. Thanks for listening. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Kit Laser.
God damn it. Every time.
There we go. Beep-boom. I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.